This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's Friday and, of course, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio.
Good afternoon.
Me. How are you, George?
A bit of gloomy Friday afternoon, a bit rainy, a bit hazy.
I know.
Yeah, we're going to bring up the spirit.
We are, for sure. And you know what? It is Autism Awareness Month and Indeed. It is the 29th of April, am I correct?
It is okay. The last working day of
I know.
The month. Can you imagine?
So we just about made it to have this discussion on autism awareness.
You really cut it fine.
I know, I did. Yesterday we spoke to Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan. She's a pediatric developmentalist and she shed light on the medical side of autism and, you know, the challenges and all of that. A lot of which, I think there's been a lot of attention this month, this year, because of the movie Reda. If you haven't heard of it, well, it's a movie about a child in a family, a child who is on the autism spectrum and how the family copes with it. It was an eye-opener. If you haven't watched it, please go and watch it. We will have the director of the movie, Tunku Mona Riza, who will hopefully join us in just a short while to just give us an update on how the movie is doing, because apparently it's not doing very well. People are not going to watch.
Do you know why it is not doing so well today? There's only one cinema that actually is showing. I know it's been showing for the whole month.
Yes, and the reason there's only one show today is because people are not watching and the cinemas have the right to actually reduce the number of times the movie is actually playing. And it's moving to later times as well, you know, the not so favorable slots. So, I mean, I think one of the reasons is people think it's just another Malay movie. When it's not. It's got English and Mandarin subtitles. It is really an eye-opener. Please, if you get a chance, go watch it. But anyway, today we're going to follow a father or get his journey or having a child on the autism spectrum. The child is Emery. He's 8 years old and his daddy is here, Edry Abdul Halim, no stranger at all, one of the brothers of KRU. Welcome to the show, Edry. How are you today?
Good to be here.
Yeah,
I was regularly tuning in for your shows, but first time seeing in person.
With
you.
Dr. George, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't know whether we are starstruck at the moment. Right?
I was trying to contain my excitement, George, because, you know, we grew up with these fellas. I mean, you were big when we were growing up.
Just to let you know, yesterday I celebrated my 40th birthday, so no more a boy band anymore, unfortunately.
Right. He's young, George.
40th birthday.
We're old now. But how's KRU doing? Good?
Oh, well, we're busy with business and stuff, but we're still producing music once in a while, because these days people don't buy music physically anymore, so it's more of digital sales. And we just, you know, when we feel like it, we probably produce songs as we go along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you very busy?
Well, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary next year. So we're preparing for a big scale concert in a few states.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Touring again.
Still doing very well.
It's been 25 years.
Yeah, that's a long time, you know. But, you know, you guys did very well as a band. I'm just quite disappointed you don't perform much and you don't do much of that anymore.
Next
got
year.
To focus on kids now.
I know you yeah, do. So you've got four children now.
Yes. And I have a special on the third one, Emery. After when he was one, I don't know whether doctor do we categorize as diagnosed with autism, or it's not really a diagnosis.
It is actually called diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you identify the characteristics and then you make the diagnosis. I mean, after all, I am a urologist, but the thing is that I do come across patients or, you know, sufferers who has got autism, but the thing is that I would think this diagnosis, because it needs to go through the psychologist or the psychiatrist to make that specific characteristics to identify someone who's got the condition.
Some pediatricians, I mean, we just had a show with Dr. Rajini yesterday, and she said you can diagnose from sometimes 2.5, 3 years old, but not too young as well. But sometimes some children show very distinct symptoms, and then they are able to tell, because sometimes they're too young to actually say.
Yeah.
Would you like to share with us, Edry, how did you find out that Emery was actually on the spectrum?
All right, okay, because we raised two healthy kids prior to Emery, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we were caught by surprise with his condition. I mean, he was one at that moment, and we were overseas, actually. And he was he had seizures. He had some seizures for about, four times, about somewhere when we were in a shopping mall out of all places. And we panicked because we never had any experience such as this before. And he was treated at a children's hospital in Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And that's when the doctor said that he had a condition. But they did further test and actually diagnosed, may I say so, if it's in medical terms, that he's got signs of autism. Mm-hmm. And only that when we got back in KL and actually did further tests. And of course, denial is always the first thing. Any parents facing a new experience in life, raising special need children. And I think for years, I think my wife Milia had a tough time to actually adapt and understanding, because you're always trying to find what went wrong, yes. what was the reason that he was diagnosed with autism. But I think after like 4 years, 5 years, we just got on with it and adapted our world to his condition rather than expecting him to change, because we were informed that there's no cure for autism, obviously, and it's just understanding how to cater to their needs and their lifestyle. So I think in general, most people are probably not that aware. It's good to have this month and on the last day of a working day in April to talk about this. Most people probably easily can identify a child A with Down syndrome, because you can tell by the looks, yeah, and their characteristics. But autism sometimes is a wide spectrum of condition. And Emery, our third child, it's only when he starts to misbehave, have his tantrums, that we can actually identify that he's not like any other kids. Mm-hmm. And he's non-verbal as well. Mm-hmm. So when we go around, he's 8 now. Whenever we go around, people just try to assume that he's going to talk and try to communicate with him.
Right.
And when he goes, whoa, 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 then that's when people got a little bit, normally they get a little bit surprised and wonder why, what's his condition, because it's quite a rare thing in Malaysia. People hardly talk about autism, actually.
They don't, yeah, no. Just to go back a little, how did Milia and yourself cope during that time? Because, I've been reading stories, and sometimes, marriages can actually break up because you are unable to understand and cope with a child on the spectrum. How did the both of you cope?
Well, I'm lucky to have a very strong wife, and it's good for her and in my position for her to focus on being a full-time housewife and a mother. If she had been a professional, and I think it'll be really, really, really tough if both of us actually have a professional career. And I have to admit, she's the one that handled the pressure most. I have my moments where sometimes I have to be away and to commit to my professional duty, but it's her that actually face a lot of challenges.
And but in reality, most husbands actually, we count our lucky stars because we have this kind of like strength, behind us. It was like,
the force behind us.
Yes. Right? Okay.
Because something, yesterday Dr. Rajani said something very interesting, and she said parents go through that denial stage, and she said more often it's the father who will come in and demand that she retracts the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that? Were you more in denial than Milia?
I think some people probably relate to my experience out there. If they try to identify what went wrong rather than what could be better, so they're trying to. For me, I didn't really look for a solution. It's just like trying to find what was the fault. So you're trying to blame yourself.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, in fact, if you look at all disease diagnosis, you will go through that sort of initial shock, and then followed by anger, and then followed by denial, and then eventually acceptance. This is like a cycle that you have to go through whenever you have adversity in life. Yeah. And then, it doesn't matter whether it's cancer or, a condition that you don't quite understand. And then that is a sort of cycle of, emotional turmoil that you go through for both men and women. It's just where you stagnate is a problem. Like you said, in the movie, presumably the father was extremely angry and apprehensive. And then so that was, what Dr. Rajani kind of portrayed that tends to be the father who actually find it difficult.
Well, she did say some women, the mothers also, but she seems to find that the father seemed to have a little bit more...
I'm quite okay, shocked
not,
to hear that.
You're
because
not
I'm
one
not
of
that.
Them. Okay, yeah, great. So you're not part of the demographic.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, actually. And causes, yeah, as you said, you don't know what causes it. I think that's one of the biggest problems. Like, and then sometimes you go through the blame game. Is it your genes? Is it my genes? That kind of thing. It can
I think the three things that actually is difficult. Number one is that there's a lot of unknown, you know, the causes. Number two, there's ambiguity in the diagnosis. And number three is the stigma the society put on this condition. And all those three makes people run away or don't want to understand about the condition. And I, you know, one of the reasons why I anticipate that not many people want to go and watch his movie, it's out of this fear because you don't really know what you're facing, and then it is society's issues that you feel like you can't relate to, and then the easy thing to do is just avoid it.
There's a lot of stigma to it, Edry.
Well, I mean, it's not really a popular condition in Malaysia. I mean, we had problems to actually identify, and we had to do a lot of internet search to actually find people who have experience handling autistic children. And there's one blog written by an autistic kid, and he's a teenager then, and explaining about his condition from his point of view. And he explained that because the common trait is that they don't, talk to you, look you in the eyes. Yep. So he said that, why is that supposed to be the normal? Because for me,
this is his world is that when he communicates with you, he doesn't need to necessarily have eye contact.
He finds it weird. Why do you have to look somebody in the eye?
Of course.
So don't blame him. So why does he have to adapt to other people just to satisfy the
society's
world,
demand?
Okay. So, and then, that made me aware that, hey, everybody's born differently, and sometimes you're left-handed, sometimes you're right-handed. Maybe that's a minor so-called advantage or disadvantage.
And who decides what's normal and what's not?
Yes, exactly. So we can't identify, categorize people, left-handed people, as being different compared to the right-handed. We just make left-handed, left-handed drive. What would you call it?
Left-hand drive.
Left-hand drive cars. Yeah. So I guess it's a matter of understanding the situation and just, be part of their world rather than trying to avoid it.
Or trying to make them adapt to our world.
Yes,
as well, which is the biggest problem.
Most people expect them to be normal,
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so we have Tunku Mona Riza on the line already. We will come back and catch up with her on how the movie Redha is actually doing, and we'll come back, of course, and continue the conversation with Edry, finding out more about, his journey with Emery, who's 8, who is on the autism spectrum. If you have a question for them, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Friday, and of course, in our health and living segments, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with us. We're discussing autism because it's the end of the Autism Awareness Month. We finally managed to get in Edry Abdul Halim from KRU, who has a child, 8-year-old Emery, who is on the autism spectrum. And Edry's actually sharing his story with us. But we're just going to go over and speak to Tunku Mona Riza. Are you there, Mona?
Yes, hi. How are you?
We're very well. How are you?
I'm okay. Surviving.
Okay, Mona, we are just going to talk about, of course, Mona is the director of the movie Redha. And how is Redha doing in the cinemas, Mona?
It's doing really poor, very, very poor. The mass audience are not responding well, unfortunately. But I've got a very good support and response, good reviews from societies and associations and all that, and families who are related to, related to the spectrum. And, of course, I've got positive reviews from the professionals, like the doctors and therapists and the professionals, actually. They are very warm towards this. But unfortunately, the general masses, the normal moviegoers, they are not responding well to this film, unfortunately.
Would you know why, Mona?
I believe, I'm assuming here because I do not know exactly what the reason is, but I'm assuming that because many are still unaware of what autism is, that could be one reason. Or it could be some knew what autism is, but because it is nothing directly affected to them, therefore they have a mentality of like, you know, it doesn't affect me, so why should I go and see? Yeah, avoid, exactly. And, you know, it could be that. Oh, I honestly do not know, because this is the first film where, you know, of this subject is being portrayed on the big screen. So we do not have, a real case study. But those are my speculations. So I could be wrong, but I'm not sure.
Okay. We have Edrie and Dr. George in the studio with us today.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi. You have a question for Mona?
Well, I mean, I do hope Tengku Mona sees the film is more of trying to achieve something, which is autism awareness, and you know, let's not take the glory of the mission to actually pass on the message, which is, you know, the more important factor here. Well, I do hope the film picks up, you know, probably on TV or any special cable channels, to actually generate more income so that, you know, get a return of investment. But, you know, again, I congratulate you for being brave enough to actually highlighting this subject matter, you know, and this, you know, but yeah, then again, I'm in the film industry as well. You know, most people would probably go for fast food rather than fine dining, but doesn't make the food at those fine dining restaurants any inferior compared to the fast food. So sometimes it's just popularity. So don't worry about it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Tengku Mona, I think it's the movie is beautifully shot. I think what is important and what really is making this movie different is that you're not really looking at the angle of the disease. You're looking at the angle of a journey of the parents. Is that what you intended?
Yes, because as you know that, you know, I mean, to be in the world of a child, it will be based on speculation. Because
we don't know.
We don't know, exactly, yeah. We do not know how we are seeing from the outside, but we really do not know what's in what they're experiencing. We have some medical reports, but it's still, you know, it's still based on it could be not kind of thing. So therefore, my film is basically based on what I see, through my research from the from the parents' point of view, from what I see with the society, and my observation. So that's the only way that I could tell that story.
I understand the shows are now being pushed to later slots in cinemas. That's not going to help very much, is it?
You know, Mira, I can't blame them either. I mean, I can't pull the crowd. So they got to generate income, yeah? So it's a business for them too. So the only thing that we hope that, you know, there is still a demand. Because if there is a demand, I know GSC will continue to play. But if there is no more demand, and I got no case to bring forward to,
You have loans to pay off. How can we support you more?
Tell the world. I have no solution for that. I mean, yes, we have some, you know, sort of plan B. But then again, it's still something that we need to execute and move forward to. Yes, we are talking about international and all that, but, you know, those are, I'm sure, you know, Edrie would know, he's in this industry longer than I am. You know, these are all like a trial and error that we have to try. So, yeah, let's see what happens. Yes, we have a loan to pay. We will pay the loan no matter what. Just have to work harder, I suppose, you know, that sort of thing.
You know, the most memorable thing I saw was the child. You know, that child star is quite spectacular. And then towards the end of the trailer, you know, for him saying all those things to say, look, you know, for a child to portray that in the eye of the sufferer, I really think it is just extraordinary. What was your fond memory when you shot this film?
On set itself, the most wonderful memory I've got is basically I realized I've got a whole lot of crew on set, and I realized that all of them, except for a couple, knew what autism was. So throughout the whole entire journey of this film, when we were filming, they all got educated. Many of them don't know what NASOM and have no idea what autism. So to me, it's like, okay, I started. I'm not an educator, okay? I'm in no position to be an educator at all because I'm not a mother of an autistic child. But the thing is, what was pleasant is to see like, oh, Mona, it's like that, huh? Okay. So it's a process of letting them know a little bit on autism. So to me, that's the most wonderful memory. And of course, during the observation, there were a lot of uncomfortable situation that we were in, because I'm just standing together with the family, because I shared it by the two cars, and we were living together with the family, and more so me with this particular family, been them with them for so long, and it was just an eye opener, you know. And there are many moments I wonder, like, okay, was I ever like that? And to me, again, you know, I think reflection is what film is all about. And that's how I felt. So to me, it's, in a way, it's a fond memory too.
Sure. Reda premiered on the 14th of April, Mona?
Yes, it was on the 14th of April.
Okay, do we know where it's showing in the next week or so?
Today, as far as I know, it's run GIC IOI Mall in Putrajaya.
Okay.
For now. I do not know what's going to happen tomorrow. So,
okay.
Yeah, for now, that's what it is. I think this is, again, like I said, you know, a speculation or an assumption from me. If there are enough people requesting for this film to run, then they might just run the film.
Okay. So we just need to get everyone to go.
I've just got two things to say to you, Mona. You made my parents cry. That's one thing. They went for the charity event recently.
Yes, I met them.
Oh yes. And yes. Probably the second thing is probably I'll talk to my brothers to actually maybe we could do something with the film internationally. Yeah.
I would love to do that. You know.
All right, we'll meet up each other soon, and you know, probably talk more about the film.
Great. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you for joining us, Mona.
Okay.
That was Tunku Mona Riza, director of the movie Reda. If you haven't watched it, please go and please watch it. I mean, not your parents. I was sobbing, Edry, and it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
Sobbing. It was really sobbing. But, you know, so just coming back to you, Edry, mm-hmm. Where did you go for help when you realized Emery had a condition, and you know, at that time, yeah. did you know much?
It's, you know, amazingly, it's so tough to look for some sort of a help in terms of getting the right treatment. Is that therapy?
Yeah,
I mean, I can't find the
intervention.
Intervention.
Exactly.
Yes. We did try once at UKM. They have a special some sort of a course for trainees to actually adapt to be a caretaker. But according to them, you know, after 6 months, they gave up because they weren't enough funding to actually operate the program. And then we went to some private clinics, and one in Klanajaya for about a few years, and now he's attending to a special needs therapy classes in Puchong. So I think I have to say Emilia knows most of these people. I mean, it's a small community.
Yeah.
And most parents, which are actually try to hide it from the fact being known by outsiders. I don't know what's the reason that people are afraid to reveal the condition of their children. And only recently I got to know Emilia, you know, shared with me that April is Autism Awareness Month, you know. So I just posted something on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And the response was amazing. I mean, like, you know, people, parents from different walks of life and different, you know, all over the states in Malaysia actually shared. And I noticed some of the comments, actually, they tagged some other people and said, see, Edry's not shy to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you? So I think that's there must have been something about.
Yeah.
About that.
You have no idea what sort of impact you create, because at the end of the day, all these are just break down that taboo and then that stigma, really.
Yes.
You know, early on you mentioned that Emery was diagnosed in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you see any difference between the care that he received and in Melbourne and in Malaysia? Was it the setup really different?
Yes. Well, I mean, up to a point where Emilia suggested that, shall we migrate to Melbourne to get some sort of a professional treatment?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that the locals are not you know, up to par to the level in Australia, but they have the specialists just on autism alone. So I think that helped to clear up.
That says a lot of things, right? Because we probably don't even have that area, that super specialization in this area.
Yeah.
Which also brings me to, you know, Mr. Yong, whose two children, Mona actually shadowed. He has two children on the spectrum, and he said something interesting. He said, this disorder in Malaysia is for the rich.
Is it?
as in, it's very costly.
And you asked the same question to Dr. Rashni yesterday.
Yes, you know, to get help, because some entails speech therapy, some physiotherapy. So it's quite a lot of investment on the part of the parents. And I'm sure you're probably not realizing, but it is costing quite a lot of money as well. We have Pochi. Okay, we've lost her. I think she had a question about how to promote these movies more. Maybe just based on your experience, Adri.
Well, I mean, the movie scene in Malaysia is very, very, you know, they just go for what's popular, you know, who acts in it, and who's this, you know, star cast. And most of the topics been told in movies here is basically just
to promote
comedy.
You just have to say that the movie made Mira sob. that itself is a tear jerking, and everyone would go because she's a tough woman.
Really, George?
To make her sob, you should go and see this
How
movie.
How would you know?
but then again, I do hope that people in general. I mean, first of all, we need the support from the media as well, that to highlight this kind of movies, you know, with strong messages. But I do hope that producers out there produce this kind of content more, especially in raising awareness for you know, it's because it helps the public to actually be more knowledgeable with specific conditions, and of course it relates to me because. You know, the movie's about autism, but, you know, I'm probably not aware of some other conditions and other kind of forms of disease, you know, which you know, I hope producers won't stop producing.
Yeah, need to be highlighted as well, sorts of conditions. Yeah. George, we always talk about younger children, but you see older children as well on the spectrum?
Well,
in your
I would
clinic?
Say older adults because, you know, in my line of work initially, because autism, if you imagine what it's like, I mean, if you look at the definition, it actually says mental condition present from early childhood characterized by great difficulties communicating and forming relationship with others. So one aspect of it is communicating and forming relationship. The second aspect is using language and abstract concept. So essentially, if you just imagine an autistic person has got their world, and then they find this adapting to our world actually often overwhelming, because all the light, the sound, the smell, the taste and everything so overwhelming that they create anxiety. And then that's the sort of, you know, patients that I sometimes come across. So the interesting thing is that usually they have parents who raise them and then protect them throughout. And then eventually somehow with their world adapting to our world and somehow coexist that way. So you can see let's say a 40-year-old man who still have problems of frequent urination, then will come and see me for medication in order to stop that frequency of urination so that can adapt to a world that we live in. So that is
a 40-year-old man on the spectrum?
On the spectrum, okay. That's right. You know, so, you know, growing, you know, it's a continuous process, obviously, and then so we coexist in different world. So the interesting thing that early on we found out that I highlighted a lot of these difficulties, tantrums and urinations, wearing diapers and things like that. But when you see the parents who raise this child from this young age to the age of 40, they are beautiful things that they actually brought up with the kids. You know, then there are certain pattern that they have, there's certain way of communicating. And when you understand that, you realize that it's a joy also. It's not all challenges when you raise an autistic kid. Do you agree with that?
Well, in a way, but I have to say is we're not leading normal lives. I mean, I've got to be very honest about it. Mm-hmm. And one thing that scares me most personally is that what to expect when he grows up.
That's right. Yeah. And because, so, you know, the most parents actually say, you know, I can give you protection up to a point. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm no longer here, what happens to you afterwards? Mm-hmm. And then that's a lot of time that I hear the older kind of like a parents.
Sure.
You know,
that's one aspect, but I'm sure you also worry about Emery as an adult.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because I have one wish that I could actually meet probably somebody who's my age and in that condition before, and how he handled through the years of adapting to the social needs of people.
George knows that.
I've yet to see any adult in that matter.
Yeah. Do you see? Yeah. You see adult.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. So Henry can probably visit.
Yeah. Communicate well.
Yeah. Well. To some extent, mm-hmm. I mean, let's say, for example, the last person who came to my clinic, actually, the mother is elderly. I mean, he's in his 40s, the mother's in the 60s, and I actually come to the clinic. The mother said, look, you know, one of the problems he faces is that he bedwets, and then also it's difficult for me at this age to clean up. So can you do something about it? So the interesting things that we do is to make sure there's no urinary tract infection, there's nothing abnormal. And one of the things that will make him extremely anxious is an ultrasound scan, because it's an intervention and it's somebody who's doing it. So we need to build that rapport. And so increasingly understand that, look, you know, and observe the patients under a certain spectrum and see what is a repeated behavior he has and so on and so forth, and eventually just adapt to that and then gain trust and eventually just do your intervention that is necessary.
But does he speak? Is he in a nonverbal or?
He's verbal, and then and I communicate with him. And then so, and it's just a matter of gaining that trust and also observing his pattern.
But really, just out of curiosity, does the mother know that she had an autistic child in the first place? Or do they actually categorize this condition as just abnormal in a different way?
Yes. I mean, I would imagine this because I would say when I first came across this person, was in university hospital, and then I wouldn't say that they're in a socially affluent environment where they have a lot of speech therapies and intervention. The mother actually adapt to the child, and then the only label that the child has is a special child.
Okay.
But there's no formal diagnosis, there's no formal intervention or anything like that, and then it's just a mother bringing up a child who actually has special needs. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, before we have that labels, you know, our time, we've never heard of autism. Mm-hmm. And then now the characterizations of the names come across, it consolidate that diagnosis, and then so therefore we have a name. But in the old days, you know, many people actually just label it as a special child. Yeah. I assume this is the case.
That's a sad bit, because I think you're highlighting the point, Amira's point earlier. It's, what was the term again?
It's a disorder of the rich.
I think it's only when you're diagnosed with autism that it's termed.
It becomes rich.
Otherwise, you're just an OKU, you know, disabled person in Malaysia. You know, you're not diagnosed with any specific condition.
Okay. That's,
unfortunately, I think there are a lot of many parents out there actually face this condition, but they're probably unaware that their children are actually
that's a
autistic.
Good point, because you know, a good point.
Because if you don't diagnose, then where are you going to get help?
Exactly.
What sort of help are you actually going to get, right? Mm. Okay, I'm going to come back quickly and ask you more about social gatherings. You have three other, Emery has three other siblings. Mm-hmm. How do you, you know, a lot of attention will end up with Emery. How do the other two siblings, how do you get them involved, as well as, you know, things like meltdowns? How do you actually cope with that? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi, and we're in our last lap running up in our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, in the studio with us, together with Edry Abdul Halim. Edry, of course, is no other than one of the three brothers from KRU, and it's Autism Awareness Month. We're discussing Emery, who's Edry's son, at the age of 8. Emery's on the spectrum, trying to figure out how Edry has actually coped with it and the journey since Emery was diagnosed at 1+, did you say? 1+, okay. So let's talk about social gatherings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some parents then just opt not to go out or not to go anywhere because they're afraid how the child is going to react and how other people are going to react to the child. Yeah. I mean, how do you manage that?
That's very true. But the thing is, I have to be fair to the other three kids as well. I want them to live normal lives. First of all, I think how to control him is basically his diet, because he gets very active with sugar intake. But unfortunately, we can't stop the other kids from enjoying their lives of having candies and so on. So we just have to actually control Emery's, you know, whatever the other kids are having. You know, keep him away from the sugar. But then again, when we go out, there are certain places that he can't actually, he just can't cope with noisy places and so on. So obviously in cinemas as well, you know, he can't, yeah, I don't think he can handle 1.5 hours of, you know, being in the dark and, you know, seeing the screen. So there were times, and even for family holidays, there were times when I actually double checked with Melia, are you sure you want to do this? Because we probably end up minding him more than actually enjoying our holiday. But, you know...
But you don't try, you don't know, right?
Yes, we tried. We tried, Doctor. And you know, especially being in hotel rooms, he would actually jump and he bangs on doors and so on. So, but, you know, we have to live normal lives as well. So we just have to make arrangements to actually make sure that you know, everybody's comfortable as well. So we tend to actually find more of chalets and so on that we keep him away from interfering with other people's privacy. But, you know, his tantrum is actually probably the biggest challenge for us. If there are any parents out there listening, if you have a child of yours being upset about not getting toys, I think that's the least of your problems.
It's a meltdown as well.
He cry with such little things, like he loves arranging alphabets. He loves to spell. And if one letter is missing or a puzzle, if there's one piece missing, he'll get very, very upset.
That's the perfectionist in him, I suppose. And they have those traits, isn't it? Obsessive compulsive perfectionists. In a way, I think it's a good thing being a perfectionist.
That's
don't
right.
you think?
Sometimes it makes me wonder, because I do have a little bit of that trait as well. but then again, probably in a different form. Jokes aside, I think he's very obsessed with everything's got to be in place and everything's got to be, in sequence. And if he misses his daily class, that will spoil the rest of the week, because he'll skip that particular routine.
Typical characteristics, isn't it? I mean, when early on you said diagnose. I mean, diagnose is based on three different criteria. One is difficulty in social communications, and that comes in a verbal and nonverbal form. The second one is social interaction, and the third one, which we're talking about, is that restricted or repeated behavior or interest. So this kind of like a intensity of perfectionist, and I have to arrange his things, is a typical thing. And also taking route to school, for example, you can't choose a new route, because that is actually steer out of your comfort zone, and that will create a lot of anxiety. And then also other things such as focused, and then stay kind of like the pattern, and then you really have to kind of follow that, and that's one of the diagnostic criteria. Can I just ask you in a second, when one of the criteria actually is this communications, right? Okay. And then it's verbal and nonverbal. And then, because there's one line that I think sums up how they look at the real world, is that for people who've got autistic spectrum, the body language that we all exhibit can appear to be as foreign as people speaking kind of like ancient Greek. And so basically we have this angry face, and then you kind of say, oh, don't do that, you know, Emery, and then that sort of thing, you know, and then you kind of like show a bit of, your anger and things like that. For him, it's meaningless, right? And then so how do you cope with that sort of like creating a form of body language that he understands?
Well, actually, by now, because he's 8, he can relate to certain expressions, but, you know, he would still carry on doing it. The worst part is actually he starts to hum himself. He pulls his hair out or knocks himself on his head. So we try to not make him very upset. So I think parents are having that difficulty. It's like we try to control our emotions so that, because otherwise he will prolong the
meltdown.
Meltdown. So, but you try to train them passing on the message, because I do feel that even though he's non-verbal, he could understand what we're talking about. But because sometimes he would give out instructions and he would tend to actually follow a little bit of the instruction. But when you try to tell him off, oh, well, I mean, like, But one thing that's very helpful, though, I think we saw a poster last time about, you know, how to identify autistic kids, is when they start to, I'm not sure, Doctor, if this is a common trait, they start to hold your hand and ask you to do the things for them.
I have no idea.
Oh, yeah? Because I think that's the first sign that we actually identify, okay, he's like that. You know, they don't want to do things by themselves. So it's just like pressing a button, he would just you know, take your hand and ask you to press the button.
Right, okay. Yeah, so someone was saying, you know, they're very familiar with the iPad, they communicate very well. Is that true?
Actually, I've seen the latest ad. I don't know, people out there can actually surf YouTube. Yep. They promoted for Autism Awareness Month. They did two commercials for an autistic kid. And he's a teenager communicating through iPad. But I still have yet to find that the app that they're using to actually communicate. He actually typed, and just like Stephen Hawking, the
that's great, isn't it?
It's kind robotic of like a, voice.
You know, modern technology can help to you know, enhance the communication, which will be fantastic.
And they respond very well to visual stuff. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Rajni was saying, so don't give them audio stuff to listen to because that's not digesting, but anything visual, so like YouTube videos and all of that, they respond quite well.
She was saying that, you know, in different languages of Dora, the Explorer.
Yes. That's right. That child was verbal. So different languages the child was picking up from Dora.
Moscow, it was on Russian.
But my Emery has got, I think he's got photographic memory because he identifies a lot of logos.
Right.
So whenever he loves buying DVDs, but not to watch the program, he will watch the opening montage of the distributor.
Right.
It's like Universal or
Sony
Fox
or something like that. Wow,
and he would actually spell those.
That's your blood. It goes without saying.
Well, at least
my
he's
daddy's
not,
a musician.
At least he's not recognizing the McDonald's sign. He said, I want that all the time.
Anyway, we're running out of time, but do you have a message for everyone, Adrian? I mean, and I want your message to be for not for people with special kids, but for the people who don't, actually.
Okay. I have to say that the challenges that me and my wife face changes a lot. I mean, we're more caring towards special needs because you know the thing is when you always think that it doesn't happen in your family, right? I mean, it doesn't happen to you, and it's always with you know the other families. But I thought that life was just black and white. You know, it's either you're somebody or not, or you're you know professional or whatever. You know, but then again, you suddenly realize that you know there's a lot of colors in life, that the things that you don't really expect that could happen to you. And Emery has taught me a lot how to appreciate other people for their differences rather than trying to everybody trying to conform to the normalities of social life. But it's a discovery by the day. We really do not know what to expect because we have prepared ourselves to actually raise him till he actually, I don't know if he's going to end up with anybody because very unlikely he's going to create a normal relationship. But we try to be there as long as possible. But we're trying to raise our kids to actually be more responsible towards, you know, their brother.
His siblings, yep.
Yeah. I do wish if anybody's listening out there and was actually diagnosed with this condition, and if you're an adult now, please, I mean, if you could tell me how is it like, how was it through the years that you actually survive and cope? Because I like to understand how he'll end up being an adult. Because most of the kids, the people I know with autism are actually below 15. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to actually understand how they're going to turn out to be. So please get in touch because I'm on Facebook, Instagram, you know, they can actually share their experience. And I'd love to know. And I it's good that you can actually expose and reveal yourself because there's nothing to be ashamed of the condition. And to them, that's just being normal.
Yeah. George?
I mean, the movie and you being here, you know, I'm speechless and I also have the utmost respect for you, number one, to share your journey with us and the rest of the listeners, and number two, for the great work that you're doing just to bring awareness on autism.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us today, both of you, Edry Abdul-Halim and Dr. George Lee on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.